Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer at WNYC. By the way, designers, graphic artists, anyone with a visual knack, the deadline is this weekend to take part in the Map Your Moves Data Visualization Challenge. We asked our listeners to fill out a form listing everywhere they've lived over the last decade and why they moved. Almost 2,000 people filled in that form, and now it's up to you artists and graphic designers to make that information beautiful. We're making all the data available to download. We want you to present the data as a map or image or movie or anything visual. It's up to you. Download the data set and find all the information you need at our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We've now posted a few of the submissions that we've received so far on our scrapbook page. Folks can find a link and check it out right now. There's one from Alexandra, who tries to capture the scope of the entire data set, and two from Michael that hone in on where people move to when they leave Manhattan but stay in the city, and where people who move to his Park Slope neighborhood have come from. They're really cool. So if you want to see some of these data visualization submissions, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show and the scrapbook. And for any graphic artists or anyone else who wants to take a crack at a data visualization of our Map Your Moves data, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you can download the data set for free, of course. Now, when Congress passed the $600 million border security bill last week, 1,500 new immigration agents, aerial drones along the southern border, things like that, Congress paid for the bill partly by hiking fees for H-1B visas. Those are visas given to foreigners with special work skills that are seen as needed in this country. A lot of technology workers from India get them, for example. They are so valuable partly because you can apply for a green card once you have an H-1B visa. They are also controversial sometimes, like for companies that seem to import whole staffs of foreign workers because they're cheaper and more compliant than Americans. So the border security bill slaps these new H-1B fees specifically on firms that have more than half their workforce here in that category. Here is Senator Chuck Schumer.
So instead of raising the deficit, which we do not do in this bill, or diverting vital stimulus funds, the Senate ultimately agreed to pay for the border package by increasing visa fees on companies who hire foreign workers in a manner contrary to the original intent of the H-1B visa program.
But there's a big outcry taking place now about that, for example, from companies in India that supply outsourced workers. There's even a suggestion that these fees erect an illegal barrier to global commerce under the Global Free Trade Agreement. Here to discuss this, Vivek Wadhwa, Senior Research Associate at the Labor and Work Life Program at the Harvard Law School. Professor Wadhwa, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me here.
First, tell us more about the law. What exactly is changing for H-1B visas under the Border Security Bill?
What they're doing is that they're slapping additional fees of roughly $2,000 on a small set of Indian companies, companies like Infosys and Wipro and Tata, who are the leading Indian companies who do R&D and provide skilled labor to American corporations.
Targeting, would Senator Schumer say he was targeting a handful of Indian companies with this bill?
The word they used, to be precise, were these Indian chop shops. So, yes, he was targeting these Indian companies. The way the legislation was written and the way he described in Senate was exactly these companies.
And sure enough, in the clip that we just played, Schumer said, increasing visa fees for those who hire foreign workers in a manner contrary to the original intent of the H-1B visa program. So do you think these companies are abusing the original intent?
I'm not too clear about what the original intent is because, like a lot of other things he said, it's not been entirely accurate. Even his claim that this will not add to the deficit is incorrect because the numbers we're talking about are very small. I can't see how you can possibly raise $200 million from these 5 or 10 companies that they're targeting. We're talking about $10 or $20 million maximum. And I think that there's a lot of misrepresentation going on here about the cost and the benefits. And what we don't realize is that the damage that this is doing to the American reputation abroad. That ultimately, what we're doing is that we're telling the world that America is becoming protectionist. We don't want foreign workers over here. We don't want any foreign products over here. And what the world is hearing is that it's okay to be protectionist. So in India, there's a hue and cry. But at the same time, we have delegations going here from here to India trying to sell nuclear power plants, trying to sell grain, trying to sell American products. And what the Indians are saying is, well, if the Americans are going to discriminate against us, let's buy European goods instead. Let's go to Russia and buy their goods. Why should we deal with the Americans who are being so protectionist? So, it's going to end up costing us 100 times more in lost business than the small visa fees that may or may not be obtained from this legislation.
So, listeners, anyone holding an H-1B visa want to call in on this? Any company, anybody with a company that employs a lot of people with H-1B visas want to call in on this? Or anybody want to weigh in on this idea of abuse of the H-1B visa program? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you're here on an H-1B visa, call and talk about your own experience. Or anyone else with an opinion, 212-433-9692. And here's a comment from our webpage that somebody posted a short time ago, Professor Wadhwa. Richard from the Upper West Side writes, these firms, I guess referring to the Indian companies you mentioned, are usually mills that prey on Indian IT professionals by getting them H-1Bs, then exploit them by billing out their services at several times the amount they are paying the, quote, consultants, often from a boiler room in New Jersey. They usually trap the consultant by requiring a large fee for the consultant to leave their employment and move to more conventional situations. The company often does not want to reimburse that fee, hence is content to be complicit in the exploitation, and the consultant can't readily come up with $10,000 or $20,000. Their methods for obtaining the visas are often questionable. You want to react to any of that?
He's right that there are companies that do that. The trouble is that that's not what the legislation is targeting. We're targeting the top companies who charge premium dollars for very highly skilled staff. So, yes, if we wanted to go after, the real abuse, we should do it, but that's not what we're doing over here.
Elizabeth in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I work for a company called Ericsson. We recently were moved outsourced by this company. We originally worked with Sprint. And all of a sudden, a company from Europe came in and outsourced us to become their employees with Ericsson. That's the company name. So what's happening is that they lay off about 50 or 70% of the engineering department to outsource it to India. And the other 20% are employees using visas from India come to work in the U.S. In the meantime, American workers have been laid off.
Why would the company do that?
To save costs. They pay, for example, an engineer from India $20,000 a year at the most, while an engineer that is an American engineer, the average will be $70,000 to start up and up, $90,000.
Now, that's
so
maybe the outsourcing for the work done over there. What about the immigrants here on the H-1B visas? Are they working for lower salaries?
Yes, they are. According to what my coworkers, I asked them how much they're getting paid. They say we're getting paid $25,000 a year, the most, and they have an H-1 visa.
Elizabeth, thank you for your call. Now, of course, we can't confirm her claim or that her particular company is doing that, but I'm sure we could get a lot of stories like this pertaining to a lot of companies. Professor, do you doubt that that's actually going on?
Well, yes, I doubt this one, because if these workers reported this to the government, the people doing this would be arrested. Ericsson would never underpay people. Ericsson is a high-class company, which is probably paying normal wages to its employees. So I don't know what Elizabeth has heard, but that is not possible.
We're getting a lot of calls like this, though. Let me take at least one more. Phil
right.
is in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Phil. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How you doing? Listen, Brian, let me tell you something. I spent 30 years in IT. After the Y2K, I couldn't buy a job, okay? On our project, a normal, I guess, as an IT worker from the States here, was making between $50 and $60 an hour. There were people in that shop from India that were making $20 an hour, okay? Now, you know, they worked for the $20, that was fine by them. What really bothered me the most was one of the guys who was there said it was right after the Y2K project was over and it was done. He was going back to India where $1,000 a month was middle class, actually upper middle class. They got him a house, a car, a living servant to take care of his kids. For $1,000 a month, dude, my rent was like $1,500, $1,600 a month at that time. I couldn't afford to do what they did. So this HB1 visa is a scam, dude. It's a total scam. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor.
What you're talking about is outsourcing because it's cheaper to do jobs overseas, and that's the reality of the world right now. That and we also American companies are also making significant revenue abroad. You know, Emerson, we've just talked about, gets a significant chunk of its revenue from overseas. Ericsson, I mean, gets a significant chunk of its revenue from overseas. So do most American companies. IBM gets 67% of its revenue from overseas. GE gets 66% of its revenue from overseas. Intel gets 72% of its revenue from overseas. So our companies are making money abroad and creating American jobs in the process as well. This is globalization. It's a harsh reality of the world now.
Vivek Wadhwa, from the Labor and Work Life Program at the Harvard Law School, my guest on WNYC, as we talk about the increase in H-1B visa fees under the new border security bill. Do you think that this violates international law? Does it violate the GATT free trade agreement, the global agreement on tariffs and trade? Is it somehow a violation of the free trade principles, if not the letter of the law? In your opinion, some people are making that claim.
Brian, it may well be the case. But, you know, just like if India slapped a tariff on Dell and IBM and Microsoft by saying, you know, companies located in this part of America with this many employees which are selling this type of product to India must pay extra fees, that's what this is like. So there may be well be issues over here.
Let me talk to somebody now who is here on an H-1B visa, and that is Smita in Tarrytown. Smita, thank you so much for calling us.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
So what do you do?
Yes, I'm a chemist in Tarrytown. I got my education here, my grad school degree, and I work for a company that hired me after getting my education, which is a lot of people like me around here. And I heard a comment by someone saying that usually people on H-1B get paid less than what the other people get paid. But I really want to refute that. Most reputed companies and most companies which adopt this program, they are required by the government, and there is some labor laws that they are required to pay competitive salaries, and they're supposed to prove that to the government when they hire any of us on H-1B. So I'm pretty confident I get paid competitively and comparable salary that my coworkers get paid.
Have you asked around? Have you asked some of the American-born chemists in your company, if there's more than you, whether they're getting the same thing or whether they're getting more?
I never talked about salary in my company, but nowadays there are a lot of websites like Glassdoor.com, and you can get all the salary information on those websites.
Thank you very much. So what do you think about this whole debate?
I think the debate, it's a different issue. I think it's more of an instigation by Senator Charles Schumer. And targeting the Indian, I don't think in the big picture he's trying to target these Indian firms, because the problem is even though he tries to increase the fees, the sheer amount of number of workers coming from there, or the sheer amount of IT, especially IT workers coming from there, I don't know how you could replace them. Do you have that much talent here? If you really do, then I'm pretty sure the companies would want to hire people from here. I think we should trust the system. The reason they're being hired is just because they need the talent here, and they're running short of that talent over here.
Smita, thank you. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. And it's funny, Professor, we have we have the opposite tone asking the same question on our comments page. Ken writes, can Mr. Wadhwa explain specifically what are the skills that these Indian or foreigner H-1B workers deliver that American-born computer programmers can't? Outside of the fact that they probably work cheaper, what is the unique skill? Americans are getting tired of their wages not moving up. So do you know, to Ken's challenge, to Smita's question, are there particular shortages of skills in this country that's really driving the H-1B visa market? Or is there just the desire of companies to bring in the people they want?
What companies say is that there is a shortage of skills.
Whoops, we're having a... All right, let's see if we can fix your phone. And in the meantime, we'll take another call. Joan in Hicksville. Hi, Joan.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I was a victim of this H-1B-1 visa. I was a computer program analyst for 22 years. I had excellent reviews from the three major companies I worked for, the last one being Arrow Electronics. I was let go and replaced by five H-1B visa employees that I was obligated to train. So I do resent that. I resent the scam saying that there are not enough American people who are technically savvy to do these positions. I can name a slew of my colleagues who have ended up in the same predicament as I have.
Joan, thank you for your call. So we're not going to settle it, Professor Wadhwa, but obviously this is a very controversial topic. We could take calls all day from people either like Smita, who are here on H-1B visas and feel that they're doing a job that nobody else is qualified to do, or people like Joan who feel that they were laid off to make room for cheaper workers here on H-1B visas. I will note that there's a cap of 85,000 H-1Bs a year, which used to get filled in a matter of days. But since the economy soured 2 years ago, tens of thousands of these visas are going unfilled anyway. So the demand for H-1Bs is suddenly down so much because of this downturn?
This is a very, very contentious issue. If you speak to companies in Silicon Valley, they tell you that they're ready to pay any amount of money to get skilled talent, but they can't find talent. You just have to go to the Ciscos and the Microsofts and realize that they really are struggling to find the right people with the right talent here. You talk to small startups here, they can't find talent. And yet you have people who are unemployed, and what normally happens is that there's a skill mismatch, that the people who are losing their jobs typically don't have the right skills. I know that they say they can be trained up for it, but companies don't want to invest in training. So it's a very, very complex issue, very emotional issue. And the fact is that right now America needs as many bright people as it can coming here, starting companies, and making the pie bigger, creating more jobs so that we can get out of the economic rut. And the damage that's being done by this legislation, by this protectionism, is that we're scaring the world's best and brightest away.
As specifically as you can, what skills are those that are in demand, but they can't find the workers for?
Java web coding skills, Ruby on Rails, SAP implementations. There are a lot of technical areas where you need specific skills for specific jobs. Those are what are lacking here in Silicon Valley more than anything else.
Vivek Wadhwa, Senior Research Associate at the Labor and Work-Life Program at the Harvard Law School. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll devote our final few minutes today to your stories about your public run-ins with bedbugs in the summer of bedbugs in New York City, or rats or other pests. They say rats are on the increase in Manhattan as well. It's the summer of bedbugs and rats in Manhattan, we keep hearing. So call up with your encounters. Let's create an audio map, or tell us what you are doing to protect yourself against the bedbugs. Has bedbug paranoia hit your home? Do you wrap everything in plastic every time you go out and come back and then put it all in the wash? 212-433-WNYC for your bedbug or other pest encounters, or what you are doing to bedbug-proof your home. 212-433-WNYC. Call us right now. We'll put you right on the air after a break. 212-433-9692.